I have taken all the toxicity and I have taken all the negativity out of my circle. Trust me, nothing, you cannot just manifest things.
I'm so glad you said that. I'm so glad you said that.
So many selfish people. I am surrounded by a lot of selfish people.
So welcome back to the Next Level podcast. On today's episode, we have Hajir Beyaz. Hajir was originally born in Algeria, but only came to the UK in 2014. She's faced many different struggles. And obviously, as you can imagine, coming over to the UK in 2014 was a huge struggle for her. And obviously the implications that came with that, which we're going to touch on today in the podcast. So Hajir, welcome to the show. How many podcasts have you actually done before?
Done two.
Have you? I've never done one.
I haven't.
No, I've refused.
Why?
My story's boring. It's boring.
No one has a boring story. Everyone has an exciting one. Do you know what? Every single company out there or brand uses a story.
Uses a story. Like, what do you mean?
I used to work for Selfridges. And I used to work for a perfume brand. And the perfume brand, like any other perfume brand, you can't really smell the perfume from the advert, can you?
No.
So how do they get to sell you the perfume? Either selling you a story, selling you a feeling, sensation, a dream. But mainly, it is a story. I was a bestseller for one particular perfume when I was working in Selfridges. That was back in 2017-ish. And the reason why I was a bestseller, we were a team of three, is because I was using the story that they told us.
So what story are you telling now? In fact, what was your story before you worked for the perfume brand? That's what I want to know.
I think I didn't know that I actually had the story. Or maybe I just refused to acknowledge. Or it could be that I thought it was too embarrassing to tell. Because I'm someone who doesn't like showing a lot of weakness. I'm a Leo. Leos like to show that, you know, they're strong and they're out there all the time and they have it all figured out. That's not right. So I had to actually accept the fact that I am just a human being, just like everyone else, that has achieved greatness because of the past he had. And before the perfume brand, I was a very ambitious person, but I was lost. I didn't have no mentorship, no guidance, no... I just had a mom. I just had a great mom who believed in me and who taught me that I could do things. So that's the only things I had. And I think that was enough to a certain level. So now it's coupled with mentorships, guidance, people who have achieved greatness, success, and I can walk their path. So before, just to answer your question, I didn't know I had one.
So take me back to 2014.
Okay.
What happened then?
I packed my suitcases from Algeria, came to the land of opportunities, came to the UK, started my master's degree in psychology. And I thought that I had escaped a life that I didn't really want. Little did I know that you can never escape your past. You just have to accept it. So here I am.
You've used the word escaped and felt lost. Mm. What was you trying to escape?
So... I probably tried to escape a lifestyle, moments, feelings, a reality.
What were those feelings?
Feelings of being lost, of not wanting to do much. I grew up doing everything. And I didn't want, I thought like, I shouldn't deserve this. I shouldn't do what I'm doing. I should just live like my peers, and I should just be just like everyone else. When I was 17, 18, 19, I didn't have that. I had a lot of responsibility that I didn't want to.
Why did you feel like that though? What happened for you in order for you to make that then decision?
Right, so when I was 14, I lost my dad. And it was not expected. It was not something that I anticipated. We lived a very happily, you know, happy family. Mom, dad, three children. I was the eldest. And all of a sudden, my dad got sick, admitted to hospital. And 2 months later, he passed away. But it was not meant, he was meant to come home. The surgery he had was successful. Everything he's done was just on point. So he was meant to come home. He did. And I think that was the last conversation I've had with him. And a week later, he passed away. So I found myself being the adult in the family without having to be the adult. At 14, I was taking my brothers to school, taking them, helping them with their homework, taking them to their swimming classes, football classes. So I found myself, I was the second person, the second responsible adult. My mom was the only breadwinner, and I was there to help and support. I had feelings of anxiety and stress, and I was very upset. I didn't want it. It was not what I signed up for.
No, I mean, how did you sort of deal with that at that young age? I mean, because I would imagine that there is people listening now that may have gone through a similar thing, whether it's mum and daughter, mum and son, dad and daughter, or whatever the situation may be. And the responsibility does fall on the younger sibling, or the young, or the eldest sibling. And there's younger siblings within the family, and they're thinking, oh, perhaps that burden shouldn't be laid on them. So how did you deal with that?
I was so angry at my mom. I don't know why. As if she was the reason. Mm. And I found myself blaming her for every single thing. It was a burden. It was a burden, but it was only making me strong. So I was the solution to every single problem. But at the end of the day, I also wanted to live my life. So I started giving her a hard time. Sorry, Mom. So she literally, she was very patient. And how I lived that from being 14, it took me about a year to cry over my dad. I didn't cry. It was the first time I discovered there was something called psychology. There was someone called a psychologist to help you out with your feelings, with your emotions, to help you out with, you know, your mental health.
Yeah.
So that was the first time I encountered that. And after accepting that I lost my dad, it's then when I had cried for the first time.
So did you go through therapy?
Yes.
And what type of therapy was it?
So psychological support, coping, you know, just going through PTSD and all that. I still go through therapy.
Yeah.
I mean, not for the same reasons.
Yeah.
But now I'm a big advocate of having someone to help you through your mental health. Mm-hmm. I think the same way your body aches, and when your body needs something, and when you have a stomach ache, you just go to the doctor. When you have a headache, you just go to the doctor. When you have a toothache, go to the dentist. So when we have an emotional ache, why don't we consult someone? Why do we think it's a taboo to consult and go to see someone who's experienced to help us to go through our emotion
I 100% agree with you. And do you think that's more prominent in men that don't go and consult someone?
Yeah. I think men, well, look, we women, if I don't feel well, I'll just call my friend. Mm-hmm. I'll listen, let's just go out. We go over a cup of coffee and we just gossip. You know, we have those moments between women. But men, because they have been conditioned that, no, you're strong. No, you shouldn't be crying. I see that in my family. Mm. The men shouldn't be crying. The men is the man of the family, like the strong, the pillar of the house. And they have to be strong enough and not show emotions. Mm. No. I think they should show emotions. Don't get me wrong, like not too much emotions. But they also have feelings. They're human beings. I think men should open up more. You never see a man just calling a friend and say, oh, I'm not feeling well. He will feel embarrassed. Why is that? I don't know. I think men should just have, unless it happens, you tell me, but it's not being expressed.
This is the reason for the podcast. It's to get people's honest opinions. It's to get people not to change, but to be open-minded to things like that. Because I certainly do, because obviously people know my journey. I've been through that myself, and now, for example, I posted a video of me doing a workout, and I had to do the workout because things were getting on top. I was like, nope, that's my kind of therapy. I needed to do it. So if I didn't, then I know who I'd have gone to. That's just what I do. But sometimes you need to get out of your own way, which obviously you've developed that coping mechanism now. But I think for men in general, it's very hard because you've got so much noise on things like social media.
Yes.
A lot of the times people go, oh, what are they doing? They're comparing themselves. Again, that's another dangerous subject in itself.
Everyone does compare themselves now.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you see like a 12, 13-year-old on TikTok just wanting to be like someone they're not. Mm-hmm. And this is a huge danger to our kids, our society, the next generations. I think we are the last generation when we know the limits and we know where to draw the line.
Yeah.
I don't think the new generations know how to do that.
No, I completely agree. And like I say, I think because obviously you've got your own podcast as well, I think we've got a fine line and that there's a balance to be had. It's not what I'm saying, there's a working life balance that you can try and achieve that.
Mm.
You have to audit yourself and then recognize what's going on. Sometimes you may have to take a step back and go, do you know what, I'm going to chill today, or I'm going to reach out to someone. Yes, people may look at you and go, oh, maybe there's something wrong with him. Who gives a shit? That's how I am now. But you have to get there yourself, and you have to break them walls down. But you can only do that by working on yourself, and obviously you have. But it's the biggest thing that I've learned is if you don't start the process now, or even if you are lost, ask your closest friends and family.
Yeah.
And if they're not willing to tell you, get new friends and not family. You can't change your family, but change your surroundings.
Yeah.
Because they will soon tell you.
Well, look, it's who you hang around with. And I'm sure you heard about, you are the average of 5 people you hang around with, right?
Mm-hmm.
So who are your close friends? To me, I love my circle of friends. I have taken all the toxicity and I have taken all the negativity out of my circle. When I speak to my mom and she's like, I can't believe you're always positive. I can't believe that. And this is what I am portraying because this is who I really am. I am the person who sees the glass half full rather than half empty. My friends, if you cannot cope with my energy, you're just going to stay as an acquaintance. You're not going to be a friend. And that's it.
Do you think we as a generation find it hard now to connect on a deeper, meaningful basis?
Yeah.
How do we change that?
So, look, if you can't change your circle or if you can't change your surroundings, that means you need new beliefs. And how you actually get new beliefs is by having to attract or challenging new behavior. If you're in too much of a comfort zone, you're not going to achieve much. So just like going to the gym, first few days are going to be very, very hard because that's a new behavior you're trying to do. So you're challenging a new behavior. And that behavior will bring you new beliefs. And the belief, because we are who we think, right? So if I think that I can achieve something, then that's what it is. For example, if I want to make £1 million and I don't believe that I can make £1 million, trust me, I will never get it. But if I start thinking, oh, my brain would accept it. And if I put a plan to it, because I challenged myself, don't get me wrong, it's as equal whether to do something, whether to not do something. Literally, the level of energy and effort is the same. You do it or you don't do it, trust me, it's the same level of energy.
Mm. Yeah.
So here, mindset plays a big role. And because I've done psychology, I'm a huge advocate of psychology. Mm-hmm. Dr. William James said something very, very powerful that I live by, which is human beings can alter circumstances of their life by altering the attitudes of minds. Nothing else. Altering the attitudes of minds. So my mindset, if it's in the right place, it gets me where I want to go.
So with the people that are now saying, I want to be a millionaire,
mm-hmm.
but they don't take the action, because
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of those people.
Mm.
How do we help those?
Okay, so three words: become, do, have. Have is at the end, mm-hmm. right? It's not in the middle, it's not in the beginning. You cannot have without you believing you can do. This is what we just spoke about, the yeah. mindset. So if you want to become, you have to work on yourself, put some effort in, change, accept,
mm-hmm.
love, share, spread, right? This is you becoming.
Mm-hmm.
Positive energy. Then do. Do, if you don't take action, trust me, nothing. You cannot just manifest things.
I'm so glad you said that. I'm so glad you said that.
You can't just have them, you know.
I'm quite the opposite. From what you just said, I'm exactly the same as that. I'll just do.
Yeah.
Then it will come.
Yeah.
It will happen.
I'll give you an example. One of my, when I first started, before I jumped in property, you know, I had to learn. Mm. One of the ladies who was literally in the same boot camp, we call it a boot camp, like, you know, the 3 days where you learn about something. A lady who was sitting next to me, I can't disclose her name. She had everything it takes.
Mm.
She was powerful. She was amazing. She was taking action. I was like, oh my God, if I am just 20% of what this lady is, I'm just going to achieve wonders. The only difference between me and her is that I didn't have the money to upgrade to the 1 year mentorship. She did. So I was like, oh, she is someone who's going to be doing a lot more. And mm. by the time I achieve maybe 1-2 properties, she would have been in 10-20 properties, right? So we kept in touch, but not much. I had a strong reason why I needed to do things. So I went on, got my first property, second property, third property, 10th property, then it doubled and tripled, and it started just going up and up and up. And then all of a sudden, the girl gets in touch with me. She's like, oh, Hadja, how are you doing? And it's been a long time. It's like, let's meet up. I was like, oh, wonderful. At that time, I had my first office. So she came to my office. I'm like, oh, how are you doing? How's your journey? Are you developing? She's like, I'm actually, you know, I'm doing my website is not working properly, and my business cards are not ready. And this guy said he's going to help me. I'm like, hold on a second. You've got no properties? Like, that was the lady who I thought was going to do amazing. But she is stuck in the little steps and making them perfect to actually start and approaching people. No, to take action regardless. Take action now and then figure out how. If you're doing it wrong, you change it. If you're not, if you're doing something right, you keep it. So this example just shows that me knowing nothing, me having no idea, just taking actions. I've probably have done a lot of mistakes. I've probably just, you know, have done costly mistakes. But because I have taken the action that I am now where I am. But because she hasn't, she was just always in her comfort zone and thinking that everything is going to be perfect before she starts to take action. That's where it's wrong. And you don't need to be great to start, but you need to start to be great.
100%. That's such a good quote. And I want to ask you about your property journey as a whole, because it's not been easy, but you've done it very, very quick. You've been very successful, but very quickly as well. And what you've achieved in that period of time, I know it's hard to achieve what you've achieved, but let's explain to the audience listening what it is you've actually achieved and how much that it makes you now, because I think it's ridiculous. So let's go from the very beginning.
Yeah.
How you actually what you learned, and then where you are today.
Okay. So how I started, I literally came across property by accident.
Yeah.
Literally. I always knew I didn't want to work for someone else. But I just didn't know how. Mm-hmm. But it was the reason why I had to do it that made me do it.
Why?
When I was working for Selfridges in 2017, I was very comfortable. I had a stable job, but I was only saving about £200-300 at the end of the month. So after all bills, rent, sending a few hundreds back home to my mom and my brothers. But I had the realization that, is this the reason why I came to the UK? Is this why I packed my bags and I left my family back home and I'm not spending the holidays with them and I'm not having the time that I'm not spending Ramadan eats, you know, like nothing with them? That's not the reason why I came to the UK. Otherwise, I'll just stay back home and just save that £200-300. But at least I would be with my loved ones. Mm. So this realization came to me, but then I didn't know what to do. And then one day, at the end of my shift, I was just talking to a colleague about reaching the target, not reaching the target, and walking to our lockers to get our stuff to go home. And my mom calls me and she said, we're about to get evicted from our house. It's the house that I was born and raised in. And I didn't know any other house. So us being evicted from there, just, it was a very blank moment, you know. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna find a way, and you don't need to worry, we're gonna go somewhere. Mom doesn't like renting. Mom always owned the house. So I asked her, is the government not gonna give us anything? Because by the time they give us something, because we're of the inheritance, who owns the house, blah blah blah, it's gonna be years and years. I was okay, cool, leave it for me. So I was looking for a business. I tried trading, I tried Shopify, I tried e-commerce, you name it, I've tried them. I never really thought I would be in property. I always had this skeptical idea. I always thought that property was for people of a certain age, 40 plus. You need to have capital, a lot of money. You need to put a down payment. You need to have a mortgage. My credit score was not the best at that time. I was, you know, still new in the UK and not British yet. And, you know, it was just the whole thing. So I never thought I would be able to make it in property. Then one day there was two events in the same hotel in central London. And, you know, those free events where you go and you just attend and they will sell you something at the end of the event. So I was like, okay, you know what? Let me just go. It was about trading. And said, maybe this time it's going to be different. So was late a little bit. The lady at the reception said, Hadja, well, she didn't know my name. She said, I asked her about the event, and she said, just walk straight turn right. That's what I've done. Walked straight, turned right. But I found myself a completely different event. I didn't know that. I was a bit late, so I grabbed the first seat. And the only available seat was at the front. So me walking in late, all eyes on me. People were like, oh, you know, you came late. Speaker on stage. So I grabbed the seat, started listening. A few minutes, like, hold on a second. This is not what I'm meant to be here for. But it was too embarrassing to walk out, right? Because it was at the front. So then there must be a break.
Is it Liam speaking?
It was Liam, yeah, it was Liam. It was, you know, and it,
So much energy as well.
Trust me. About 400 people in the room, everyone locked in, listening to him. And me was like, oh, you know what? When is this going to end? There must be a break. I need to reach for the other event. Necessary. But he was talking about how you can start in property without having a lot of money, without having a huge credit score, without knowing much, without, you know... And it sounded like he was talking to me. Mm. I said, you know what, Hadja, forget about the other event. Just listen to what this guy has to say. I didn't have nothing to lose anyways. And if you're not winning much, trust me, you don't have a lot to lose. So I stayed the whole day, listened to him. And just going back to the story, and his story was just amazing. And I was like, oh my God, if this guy has gone through this much, and is where he is right now, I think it's worth it. So I signed up, went on 3 days boot camp, listened to everything he had to say. I'm now working closely with Liam, which I'm very, very grateful. And then I went on, got my first property, second property, so many properties, just because I had a reason why. All I could see was my mom being evicted. All I was waiting for is that phone call saying, Hadja, we're done. It's our last day. So I kept on grinding. I had a lot of people saying no to me. I had a lot of people closing doors or hanging up phones on me. I had a lot. Did I care? No. Because my reason why was more important to me than any no I was receiving. Till one day, someone believed in me. Gave me their first property. So he asked me, why are you doing this? And I told him my story. I said, because I want to help my mom. Mm. And it's okay if you say no. I want to help my mom. My mom is about to be evicted. So he noticed, or he saw in me, and he believed in me. He saw that spark that I was not here to bullshit him. I was not here to... not to make it. I was determined that I was going to make it. First property made me £400. Fourth of my salary. Wow. Second property, a bit more. Third property, maybe a bit less. Four, five, six properties. Now properties average £1,000 each. I'm like, it's time to sack my boss. It's time to say bye. To the people I used to work with, and focus and put the same level of energy into my own business. Yes, kept on making mistakes, kept on making people proud, kept on providing the best service to the landlords, and landlords referred me to another and another to another, and that's how I grew my business. And in COVID, it just... While people were returning their properties, I was just taking them.
I was going to ask you about COVID. There's so many questions that I could ask off at the back of the rent to rent. I will ask them, because there's many people that have been on the show that I've spoken to about the rent to rent model that go, do you know what? It's not actually investing in property. And I said, well, have you got any? No. Does it make you money? Yes, it is a business. Do you know what? It's a business, and if you run it properly, it can make you some serious money. But because I think they're investing in bigger developments, they see it as, well, why would you bother doing it, making a £500, maybe £1,000 a month, because they see it as high risk. Mm. What are your thoughts on the people that say rent to rent's pointless?
Well, it's made me who I am today. I'm running multiple seven-figure businesses just on the back of rent to rent. Mm. It's a very low level entry, and it's an easy access and jump into the property ladder. From the rent to rent, I was able to get flips, developments, whatever it is. It's not what I really enjoy to do. But I mean, the developments, I don't really enjoy doing that. The flips, I don't really enjoy doing that. But owning an asset is good. But rent to rent, I was in love with it. It doesn't challenge me anymore. But we've got over 100 properties now in our portfolio. And some of them, like a dozen of them, are on purchase lease option just from rent to rent. So technically, rent to rent got me in a position where I'm going to own a house in 3, 4, 5 years, buying it with the same price that it was 2, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So for people who think rent to rent is not good, okay, that's their opinion. You know, we can't... I'm not going to say, but it has made me who I am today, and I'm happy with that.
Yeah. I mean, and can you actually get started in rent-to-rent with little to no money?
That was me. I had no money. Not just little to no money. I literally had no money. I had credit cards. I had very poor credit score. I had... My English was way worse than it is right now.
It's your fourth language, isn't it?
It is my fourth language. I had no knowledge in property. So rent to rent was the only way I could jump into the property ladder. Mm-hmm. The only way. So someone who is now listening to me, thinking, how do I get into property? Rent to rent. And then you can choose a model, whichever you want. You can choose serviced accommodation, HMO, whichever you want, right? I love both. Mm-hmm. I have both. I have single lets as well. But rent to rent is a strategy.
And what about the time aspect?
It's up to you.
Yeah. So how much time did it take you to get your first one? Because from my experience, the first is the hardest.
It is.
And then it's a snowball.
It does. Look, this is why I said your reason why has to be very strong. Mm-hmm. Again, my reason why, look, it's like a horse, you know, just looking at one target.
Put your blinkers on.
Literally. That's all I had. I mean, like, all I could see is just my mom being evicted. So that's the only thing that kept me going. Some people, they will try, bring one landlord, two landlords, three landlords, one agent, two agents, three agents, and then they give up. Because why? They don't have a strong reason why. And what I always say to my mentees, I said, look, the same excuse you're giving yourself why you can't do it, make it the reason why you have to do it. You tell me, oh, I don't have the money, make that the reason why you have to do this. You tell me, I don't have the time, make that the reason why you have to do this. Mm. Are these not strong enough? You know what I mean?
I think a lot of the time people are... They look at the amount of money that you can potentially earn, but they don't want to put the work in. Because money's not the driving factor. Because they can earn the same amount of money going to work, they get to the end of their shift and it's, say, 5 o'clock.
Can they? Can you make £1,000 with just 5 hours?
No, what I mean is they make the money that they earn from their work at, say, £2,000 a month. They get to, they do a 9 to 5, it gets to 5 o'clock and they go, oh, can I really be bothered?
Can't be bothered.
They get in that cycle and they go, oh, now I've got to phone the agents or go online and message landlords.
Yeah.
They can't bother to do it. And by the time they've got round to that and gone, it becomes habitual that they don't do it.
Mm.
And they fall out of love with the reason why of making an additional £500 to £1,000 a month.
Yeah.
And then the reason why is not as strong as it once was.
Yeah.
If it's just money.
Yeah.
So for me, excuse me, it has to be stronger than just the monetary value of making £5,000 a month, £10,000 a month. And yours was, mine was. That's my opinion.
Mm.
And if it is, you'll be very successful.
Totally agree.
If you're doing it for money, there's going to be the odd person out there that will be successful if you've got the blinkers on. But there's very few people that I have come across that I've helped and mentored, and I would imagine you've done the same, because quite often there'll be another shiny penny that comes along where you can make £500, £600, £700, maybe £1,000, and they'll be sidetracked by that because it's easier. You don't have to put as much legwork in. maybe a flip. Do you see what I mean? So, yeah, that's just my two pence worth on it, because I've been there. We've walked a similar path. I mean, I was included in that. I didn't go to the amount of properties you did, but I was sidetracked by a flip because it seemed easy and easier. I made more profit.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's...
Well, you might. Look, you might make a lot of profit from the flips. Yeah. And it's a great strategy. Mm. It's an amazing... It's just that I don't see myself doing this on the... all the time. I'm a people's person.
Well, yeah, I completely agree. So I've done three, and I was like, do you know what? It's not me. Done.
Mm. Yeah.
That's
it. I have flips.
Yeah.
I've got properties that I flipped, and I love the outcome, and I love... You know, but I am a people's person. Yeah. I love dealing with people. It's just me and the landlords and just having that relationship. And, you know, we go on dinners. It's just nice to see. Well, owning the property is also good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Having the capital, it's going to, there is a capital appreciation after a few years. It's just that I do that on the side. Don't get me wrong. I do that. But I also keep on having properties. On rent to rent, and now I'm teaching people how to do that.
So, what would your message be to anyone that's watching, that looking to get started in property, that's got obviously little to no money, they're very limited on time, they're thinking, right, well, listening to your story, they're going, oh, it's not possible. What's your message to them? Because you've got your own program.
Yeah.
But obviously, give them a message. To say, I know what I would like to say, get out of your own head. Because as soon as you get out of your own head, you're done. You're halfway there already.
Mm.
But what's your message to those people?
Get out of the comfort zone.
Mm.
I like to call it the toxic zone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, get yourself to do things.
Mm.
Get out. Go to networking events. Meet people. Build a relationship. Go to see agents. Meet with them. I mean... And be a positive person.
Yeah.
Don't be selfish. If you're selfish, you're not going to go out. You're not going to get there. I have seen so many selfish people. They come and they like to play this game and they're not going to succeed. So many selfish people. I am surrounded by a lot of selfish people.
What do you mean?
I mean, look, our industry. We know almost everyone, right?
Yeah.
There's so many people who want a piece of the pie that you have, but probably want the whole pie.
I think there's a lot of people within the industry that have an agenda, but they will try and help you get to where you want to get to, because they can see the drive, the ambition that you've got, and I think that's only natural. Because they've obviously been doing it a lot longer than what we have.
Yeah.
And if they can help us get there, would you want to potentially give it up? I think because we've got the fire and we know where we want to go to, horses for courses, would I give it up? Potentially not. If there was synergy there, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not one to give something up if I don't necessarily need to. I know that you're not either. So
giving up your ego as well, you know?
100%, yeah.
I was a victim of my own ego. I had an ego as huge as a moon, and I didn't like to admit things.
Mm.
But, you know, giving up your ego, and I'm sure so many people who are listening to us are going to have to give up that.
1,000,000%. Like, for example, when it comes to calling the agents, I'll give people an example for this. In one area... my ex-wife now, she was better than me. She could close better than me. So I'm like, that's you, because the ultimate goal was to get more deals across the line.
Did that trigger you?
No, it didn't actually, because obviously I had the debt recovery business before, and it was just a volume game.
There's
more people on the phone, it closed more money. So I was like, you know what? That's on you. You deal with that, and then I just go to another area where I might have been better. So.
Mm.
People have to realise that it's a numbers game.
Do you think it was because she was a lady?
Yeah, I do. I absolutely do. But I'm quite, well, I'm blunt. And I would just go through the motions. I'd build the rapport. But if they said no, I'd try to understand why. You'd go through the whole rapport building process. But she would do it in a completely different way, in her way. And I thought, do you know what? That's cool. Really doesn't faze me, but I've got quite thick skin.
Yeah.
And if it worked, I'm not going to get angry with them because ultimately it's feeding the beast.
Mm.
So if it was because she's a lady, it doesn't impact me. It really doesn't. You have to, if you are going to build this machine,
yeah,
you have to build a team with you, because you can't go alone. That's one thing people have to realise as well. You can't do it on your own. And the quicker you realise that,
absolutely,
the better.
Absolutely.
Because you've got a big team as well now.
We've got 15 people in our team. It's not just a team, it's a family.
Yeah.
Everyone knows what they're doing. Well,
yeah.
Whether they're virtual, whether they're here in the UK, we all love each other and we all work together. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. I have, and I can trade them for the world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I have the ones who are in the Philippines, who are here. You know, we've got two offices. From doing the social media, to doing the inspections, to dealing with the admin, to doing the cleaning, the handyman, every single one of them is literally a strong asset to the business.
Mm-hmm.
Literally. And I'm glad that they work in synergy all together.
What would you say that your biggest sort of like struggle to date has been in personal and business life?
I'm too kind-hearted. I'm very, very, very kind to a point. I see that as also a weakness, and sometimes people take advantage of it.
But earlier that you said, just touching on what you said earlier, you being weak, you see as like a strength now, I suppose.
Yes. Well, I don't let people take advantage of it anymore.
Yeah,
I'm still kind, but I just don't let people take advantage of it, because I've had situations where it did cost me much, and it when it costs you your feelings is the worst things. If it costs you money, if it costs you time, it's okay. You can just get over it.
Mm.
But if it costs you your feelings,
mm,
then it hurts.
Has it impacted personal relationships, like?
Yes.
The business or?
There was a relationship that is the only business partnership I went in, and I shouldn't have accepted, and I did accept. And it did impact me, because when it came to an end, the principal was like, oh, I value our relationship, our friendship more.
Mm.
But was it a friendship?
Mm.
So, question mark, until now. I don't think we were ever friends.
Would you speak to them again?
We are speaking. We talk. Oh, yeah, we talk. There's no beef. Listen, no hard feelings. I still love the person the same amount, if not more. And I love to see them succeed. And I wish them all the best.
Mm.
Because I'm a very good person. And if they really need, if they ever need anything, I am here to help and support.
Obviously, I can see that in you, and that's because I know you. But people looking in will go, why? Why though? Is it because is there a fear that we're being driven by insufficiency?
It could be, or it could be that that's my past trauma.
Mm. Not just you, it's
people, human being,
yeah,
in general.
Yeah.
Look, if you're a giver, you're a giver.
Mm.
And I think that there's no better feeling in the world than the feeling that someone has achieved something because of you.
Agreed. 100% agree.
The level of fulfillment it gives me when I see someone has achieved something just because I've helped them do something is amazing. It's amazing. Whether it's my family, whether it's my friends, whether it's my mentees, whether it's my business partners, whatever it is, I am amazed at the feeling it gives me. And I'm addicted to that right now.
And is that what you're doing now? So you're going around and
yes,
helping other people?
Yes.
So tell me about that.
You know, for selfish reasons, it's not about the money. Part of it is, obviously, it gives great income on along the side. But as I told you, since I was 14, maybe from before that, my mom always showed us how to share things. Me and my younger brothers we're amazing together. And I've seen how I was always given to them. And that my mom was always making sure that that's how we are, right? Like, I remember this one day, me and my brother, we did fight big back in the days, a long time ago. I was like maybe 15. I said, "Oh, I hate you." And he said, "I hate you too." And of course he didn't mean it. And I was going to go out and she said, "No one leaves the house before you guys make literally, you know, just."
Yeah.
And I'm like, "No, I don't want that. She said, if you walk out of here and a car hits you and one of you dies, what's going to happen?" And I was like, wow, that was so powerful. That was my mom telling me, if I ever died, is he going to feel okay? If something happens, if he ever died in that moment, am I going to feel okay? I'm not.
Mm.
So me and my brothers, we never really keep a fire for a long time. We have a misunderstanding. We never did. And that's what happened with my dad, because I regret a lot of things. I regret not being able to tell him things, not being able to have some openness with him. I regret a lot of things. So this is why now I am making out for every single thing, making up for every single thing I couldn't do when I was younger. And I'm doing it right now.
Is there an added pressure on yourself living with the regrets and trying to potentially put right the wrongs in your own head?
Mm. Good question. If I ever live with regrets, I think I'm learning from them. I used to, but then what can I do? All I have to do is just to accept them and let them not ruin my life. If you don't, I'm gonna have a miserable life. So I do regret a lot of things.
What's your biggest regret?
Not being able to say things to the right things to the right people.
Like who?
Like my dad, I never told him that I loved him. And I think it's not something in our culture to say such things. But I wish I could. But I'm making sure that I'm sharing my feelings more with the people that I love, yeah. And there's a few more people, but that was my biggest regret, because the person cannot come back. But the people who are in my life right now, I make sure that they know. And look, don't get me wrong, whether it's good or bad, whether it's love or hate, I will share it, right? Even if it's something that I'm not happy with. I used to keep things in myself, but I'm not. I'm not anymore.
And I think it's very important that people recognise that as well, that if you keep things in and bottled up, it's like a Coke bottle and it's going to explode.
It will.
And sharing things, doesn't matter who it's with, you've just got to let it out and vent. So tell me where your happy place is.
With my mum, home, comfortable. She's knitting because she loves knitting. And I'm just by her side. So, yeah, that's my happy place.
So just one last question. Obviously, you've done an amazing, you've been on an amazing journey in the last couple of years, and it's fantastic to see, and obviously I've been following your journey as well. But from a personal point of view, I think what you've achieved and the amount of people that you've helped along the way, I think is more important and impressive than the amount of money that you've earned or the money that you can earn.
Yeah. Well, money is important.
It is important. And don't get me wrong, I love money and I know that you love money. But the amount of the impact that you can create on people's lives through the mistakes that you've made and the amount of lives that you can and potentially change in the future as well, I think is absolutely amazing. But always in the podcast with this is, Hajar, how are you doing?
I'm doing amazing. Brilliant. I'm doing great. I am living the life that I want with the hunger and the ambitions to do more.
Brilliant. Hajar, thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks, Lewis, for having me.
Thank